there was an Ambien-induced tweet from Roseanne Barr, which resulted in the cancellation of her very popular show. And she, apparently she was making $1 million per episode, and many of her, the cast members lost their jobs. The likely legal mechanism making all of this possible, the morality clause. We've heard about it, and now we're going to talk about it. And with us today is Jeff Becker, the chair of Chicago's Swanson, Martin & Bell. He's the head of the entertainment and law practice. Welcome.
Hi, Karen. Nice to have you here.
So nice. And it's so funny because is it true that you are the lawyer for the band who was just in here?
I actually am, yes. I do work with Carly and Martina. It was quite fun to see them in here right before me.
That's great. And you have worked with Chance the Rapper?
I have.
Interesting. Very interesting. We'll talk a little bit more about what it's like to be an entertainment lawyer. But I want to get right to the issue of morality clauses. Can you tell our listeners, what is a morality clause?
Morality clause has its basis in protecting brand recognition of a company, right? So you'll have a company who hires an individual who has some sort of notoriety to them already, either to sponsor some sort of brand, to be on a television show, to be an artist in some manner, connected with the company. And what the company does is they add a provision to their contract that says if you act in a certain way that could be a very objective thing, where if you are convicted of a crime, if you act in a manner that brings disrepute or a lack of positive brand recognition to our company, we have the right to terminate our contract.
So if you are representing the artist, you obviously want to make these things as specific as possible, I would guess, because you want to give your clients some parameters, I would imagine. When things are too amorphous and too kind of unpredictable, would that possibly lead to a dispute as to whether or not that morality clause was actually breached?
Well, yeah, the beauty of contracts generally is that they bring certainty to the relationship between the parties. You have the opportunity when you're getting into the relationship to define the parameters of that relationship. Obviously, if the provision that you're looking to is vague or lacks objectivity, it's going to create a lot of issues between the parties when that issue comes up later. So with morality clauses in particular, absolutely, you want to have as much objectivity and clarity as to how that provision is going to work and what would be required to actually invoke it to terminate that individual, that celebrity, that artist, under the terms of that contract.
So when you negotiate these things, I mean, and I'm not going to ask you to read one or to, but paraphrase, and you did say some of this, to bring the organization into disrepute or are being convicted of a crime. But other than that, what other kinds of language do you put in there to kind of make it a little bit more solid and give the artist the heads up that if you do this, you're going to be canned?
Certainly. Well, so some of the language often looks like this. Anything that you do that will tend to shock or insult or offend the community or public morals or decency or prejudice the producer or the company in general, that's the provision as it looks typically when it comes from the company. What we try to do at that point is claw back on anything that's general, that's subjective, that would allow us to bring more definitiveness to what has to happen. Often what we're looking at are things involving crimes, right? If someone's alleged to have acted in a certain way, we, representing the individual, don't typically like that. We like it to be something that's done through a conviction, right? Or something that goes through an arbitration process where somebody actually determines if the allegations are true. The place that you might have seen morality clauses come up even more recently in the last year or so is with the Me Too movement.
Obviously, right.
Yeah. Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, all of these different situations have come up, which have caused, in the film industry, producers to look much closer at the morality clauses they're invoking with their artists.
And this is putting everybody in a very difficult spot because, as you say, an allegation shouldn't mean that it ends your career. However, an allegation could be just as harmful as a conviction or a lawsuit or a payment or a settlement. So it's interesting that these allegations can be made and people's whole careers can be really shot when there's really no proof of it. And I think that offends a lot of people.
It does. It does. But you have to understand, obviously, that once these allegations come out, it starts clouding so much the relationship between that celebrity or that individual and the brand, the producer, whoever it might be on the other side. For the sake of today, I'll just say the employer. And that could be anybody, the brand, the producer, the record label, whoever it might be. When the employer is finding themselves so much entwined in defending what the individual has done that it's distracting from the value of the brand itself, they often have to make a decision to separate themselves from that individual, for better or worse. And they know this going into it, right?
I mean,
the idea is, when you're getting into a relationship with the employer, if you're representing the artist, you need to make sure the artist understands there are certain things, if they come up, are going to be an issue. And interestingly, one of the major parts of these provisions people look at today is whether the misconduct, the alleged misconduct, happened after that contract was signed or before. In the case of Kevin Spacey, for example,
right,
most of these allegations involve things that happened years ago. It doesn't change the fact that when you look at what Netflix has had to do, they parted ways with him because it's pulling so far in the direction now that they would be defending his actions that kept him on, even though those actions happened years before House of Cards even existed.
You're listening to the Karen Conti Show, and Jeff Becker is an entertainment lawyer here in Chicago, and we're talking about morality clauses. If you have a question, please give us a call, 312-981-7200. Karen Conti here, and we're talking to entertainment lawyer Jeff Becker about morality clauses and some of the things that have been in the news lately. The history of morality clauses is a kind of an interesting one. Can you kind of give us a quick summary of your knowledge of what that history is?
Yeah, the morality clauses kind of derive out of the 1920s. There was a party at Fatty Arbuckle's home, a celebrity at that time, and someone had died, and there were allegations of rape and murder, and even though he wasn't necessarily directly involved in it, it became a situation that the producers found themselves defending against over and over and over again. And after that time, Universal Music, I believe it was, or Universal Studios, was the first company to really put into a contract a provision that said, if you're involved, even if it's not you directly, but if you're involved in a situation that brings public disrepute to us, that causes issues for us and our brand, we have the right to terminate our relationship.
You know, I just think of some of these artists who want to stretch or push the envelope, I guess I should say, like the Samantha Bees and even Roseanne Barr. I mean, she's an outspoken person, and she says things that are outrageous. But where, you know, how do you draw the line here? And someone gave an example the other day about how when you remember All in the Family, and if you're old, of a certain age, you remember that television show, right, where he was kind of a racist and he was kind of a blue-collar guy and he'd say all kinds of things that were inappropriate. But you kind of knew that he was playing a character and that Carol O'Connor himself was an educated theater, fine actor, and he was portraying somebody as a caricature almost. And so you wouldn't take offense to the things that he said on camera, but where does the line get drawn if you are hired as an actor to kind of push that envelope?
Well, if you're hired as an actor to push the envelope, that's one thing. If you're not hired for that purpose, that's a completely different situation. Sam B, you know, had her career started with The Daily Show, and she was part of this comedic pressing the envelope on a political
right.
spectrum level. That's what the purpose was behind her being hired by Comedy Central, pushing the envelope further. Now, Roseanne Barr is a character. Everyone knows her as being, you know, from a right-wing perspective, someone to push the envelope outside of a show. She was hired, however, as an actor to put together a show, the Roseanne, you know, show, that isn't necessarily supposed to be focused on politics. And even then, when you look at the statements that she made, those statements were extremely derogatory from an objective standpoint,
right?
Samantha Bee didn't speak in a racist fashion. She didn't speak in that manner. She spoke in a way that perhaps people didn't like, certainly when it came to how she described the subject of that statement.
I would call it gender. It was offensive from a gender standpoint, because using the
sure.
C word to me is a gender slur.
You know, and that's interesting, because at the end of the day, you have to look at, in my opinion,
sure.
How brands are impacted by it, what they're doing. You know, both sides of that situation, whether it's Roseanne or Sam B, you had sponsors pulling their sponsorships from,
sure.
from the shows. And the stations needed to decide, the networks needed to decide what they want to do. Comedy Central knew getting into this with Sam B, that's what they want her to do. They're not going to walk away from that. And quite honestly, it probably isn't a breach of her contract. Whereas I haven't seen the contract with Roseanne Barr, ABC probably had other provisions in there, and the morality clauses are often linked to what your job and responsibility is, right?
Right.
And if you're going to get into a situation with a bad boy, right, you know, there are certain sponsors that walked away from Ryan Lochte after he went through the Olympics and had lied all about where he was partying that night. A new sponsor came along later on that said, hey, we want to sponsor you and have you endorse our brand because we believe in redemption, right?
Right.
And so that situation is completely different than the ones we're looking at here.
So I had a thought that you have all of these people who were staff members and other actors in the show. They said there were about 200 of them who are now out of work or maybe will be out of work because of what Roseanne Barr said. Would they have a possible lawsuit against Roseanne? So the idea would be that Roseanne owed them a duty to be a, you know, follow her morality clause, not violate it. And because she did that, and she did it in such a way that she should have known that it was foreseeable if she said something obnoxious, like she said, that the show would go away and all of these people would be out of work. Is that
a stretch? It's an interesting proposition. I'd say it's a little bit of a stretch,
yep.
But you know what? That's what we as lawyers have to do sometimes,
that's
and
right.
It's not clear on the face. The larger actors on the show are going to be just fine. They have contracts with ABC, and those contracts are essentially pay or play. They're going to get paid anyway.
Okay.
Right? So they're not going to have an issue, most of them. There are hundreds of staff members who will. And the way that ABC is looking at this, at least, is likely what we're all talking about right now, is this is a force majeure. Roseanne, going off the hinges on Twitter, was a force majeure outside the control of ABC. We have the right to cancel the contract whenever we want to. So they're likely going to be out of luck, at least with respect to the producer and the contract they had with their employer. With Roseanne, I think it would be amazing to watch somebody put together a lawsuit that went after her for some sort of breach of duty, perhaps negligence. I don't know.
Interesting.
Obviously, they don't have a contractual relationship with her directly, so that might be a tough one to press.
Yeah, interesting. Let's switch over to Sesame Street. There was a lawsuit brought, I believe it was last week. Some of the Sesame Street, the owner of the brand, brought a suit against the producers of the Melissa McCarthy's film, Happy Time Murders, because the film uses the tagline, "No Sesame, All Street." Apparently, it's kind of a raunchy show with puppets that look very much like the Sesame Street puppets. In fact, they were created by the son of the creators of the Sesame Street puppets. And I heard that it was dismissed this week. Can you talk a little bit about the basis for this lawsuit and why Sesame Street would bring such a lawsuit to enforce its apparent rights?
So let's just back up for a moment. The case was not actually dismissed.
Okay.
And I've looked into this quite a bit as of recent as well. Everyone seems to report it as being dismissed.
Yeah.
What actually happened was a TRO motion, a motion for immediate relief, was filed by Sesame Street.
Stop using my words.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
And let's just talk about what the case is actually about. What happened is, and you're right, it's raunchy times six, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is. It's puppets having sex and puppets killing each other and puppet detectives trying to find out who killed the other puppets, right? It is similar to Meet the Feebles from back in the day or Avenue Q on Broadway. You know, Sesame Street on crack is how I always describe those. Hopefully I don't get sued for trademark infringement now. That's what the case was really about. It's trademark infringement. Sesame Street owns the brand Sesame Street, right? The owners of that company own the brand Sesame Street. And when you own a brand name like Sesame Street and someone's using it in a way that either causes... Really, the fundamental factor is there a likelihood of confusion between how somebody else is using that name and our affiliation with how they're using it? Does it look to the public like we're endorsing that use, that we're the sponsor or the originator of that use, or is their use diluting our brand in some way? Is someone, for example, making a cookie and calling it Keebler when it's not Keebler and it's a really crappy cookie, right?
Right.
Now it's ruining our brand. That's what Sesame Street had really an issue with. And it wasn't the movie. Sesame Street made it very clear. We're not suing to stop the movie from coming out. We don't have a problem with the puppets. Our real issue is the fact that they used the phrase, "No Sesame, All Street," on the print ads as well as in the trailer. And what they wanted to do was stop the trailer from going further. When they file a motion asking for the trailer to immediately be pulled down, the judge said no. That is a sign of where it might go.
Yes.
Later, the judge is saying it looks like you might not have a really great case. At least today, I can't give you your immediate relief. they're back in court this month, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Very interesting, because I kind of had a feeling that the case had merit, because the puppets did look like the Sesame Street puppets. You're using the name Sesame, using the name Street, and people could be confused that this might be something that's sponsored by a wholesome brand, and it's certainly
sure.
not everything but wholesome.
But it's interesting, right? Because when I look at it, the first thing I look at is it's no Sesame, right?
Right.
No Sesame All Street. And when you're looking at whether the public's going to be confused as to whether the Sesame Street owners are actually involved in this, it almost on its face looks like there's a departure from the original brand. That they're saying this is not Sesame Street. This
right.
is Puppets on Crack.
You're right. Okay, we have 10 seconds for this answer to a very big question.
Sure.
What is a copyright and what is a trademark?
The trademark is a phrase that's used to identify a brand to the public. Nike, just do it. The swoosh. A copyright is a bundle of rights that protect something that you've created, like a musical song, a book, or a movie. Completely separate rights, in both property of the mind, but in a different way.
Jeffrey Becker, thank you so much for joining us. How can people contact you if they are, like for instance, me, like I want to be a star and I want you to bring me through the process? That was really a nervous laugh.
Thank you. They're welcome to go to our website at www.smbtrials.com. S as in Sam, M as in Mary, B as in Boy, trials.com. They can also email me at jbecker@smbtrials.com, or they can call the office at 312-321-9100.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us. You'll come again, I'm sure.
Of course. Absolutely.
Okay, take care.